Welcome to the Smart Tech Check podcast, hosted by Mark Vina, your home for candid, insightful, and provocative conversations about the smart home, home automation, security, smartphones, PC and console gaming, and much.
Hi, everyone. My name is Mark Vina, host of the Smart Tech Check podcast. Today is Wednesday, December 18th, 2024. Joining me for today's podcast are Stuart Walprin, who scribes for Popular Mechanics, AARP, Techlicious, Investopedia, and other terrific publications. Rob Pecoraro, who writes about tech developments at PC Mag, Fast Company, and other publications. And John Quain, who writes for the New York Times, Smart Cities, and Tom's Guide. Guys, welcome to the podcast. We haven't done this in a long time.
It's been a minute. Nice to see you all again.
It's been, yeah, indeed.
Yes, and I've already chatted you, Stuart, on Juan Soto going to the Mets, and that's why I'm going to cut you off right now and remove you from the podcast. Rob, thank you for not humiliating me about the worst NFL team in probably the last 50 years.
Somebody's got to be in last place, you know.
And John, I know you're a big promoter of StreamYard. I won't let you go into that. StreamYard will cut we'll cut up the podcast. But you guys have any plans for the holidays? What do you got? You staying in town, or what are you doing, Rob?
I'm heading out to California to spend a little time with my wife's mom and the rest of the extended family. So, and I plan to take a lot of naps.
That's good. That's always a nice gift from your relatives. Stuart, what are you doing?
A complete unknown in the afternoon and then dinner that evening. It's not my holiday, and we've done the last few years with her family, which we just decided we didn't want to do it this year.
Well, you're not going to, you can't go to Absolute Bagels anymore. That's for sure. I'm going to do New York, Vermont. It's going to be really cold. St. Louis. And then it's off to CES, wonderful Las Vegas.
Now, John, I just got to get this in. John, I know you do have Christmas Eve dinner with Elon Musk.
Yeah.
What do you bring, as a kind of a guest when you have dinner with him? What do you bring? Do you bring him like a little box of, what was that movie? You'll know this, Stuart. Remember the movie with Woody Allen where he showed up?
Yes, he brings pastries, doesn't even bring an assortment.
Like chocolate babka or something? Like a Seinfeld thing? I mean, I could bring him.
Busy in the Cuban dictator or whatever the dictator was. And it's very East Coast. It's Woody Allen. And he had a box of, was it a sponge cake or whatever it was.
No sponge.
You know, the bakeries tie the box up, they put the string around it. They don't do that on the West Coast.
And the dictator complains. He complains to the dictator. The dictator complains. He brings he brings pastries to a dinner, doesn't even bring an assortment.
Well, I could bring, for Elon, it would probably be like either an Innoviz LiDAR sensor for him in his stocking, or a water bong, sort of toss up between water bong, LiDAR. Not sure.
It would have to be a connected water bong that's probably hacked by the Chinese government.
Oh my God. All right. Let's get into the podcast here. Let me bring up some slides here. So this is going to be a fun one. We're all going out to CES.
Yeah.
This should be a pretty well-attended show, my guess. The first thing we always talk about, how many people are going to show up? Is it going to get 150,000? I don't think they did 150,000 last time. I think it was like 120.
Look that up.
Yeah, it was a smaller number than they expected. But, now that the political climate's changed and people seem to be more enthused about business, I don't know whether that's going to affect attendance. But, Rob, let me start with you. What do you think you're going to say?
AI applied to everything as if it were sort of computational mayonnaise. I've seen there are lots of useful applications. Like on this Mac, I do find that the Apple intelligence summaries of each new email are a little handy sometimes, especially when people can't be bothered to use an original subject header. But sure, machine learning can help upscale video on a TV, but we need to have it in everything. Do we need to have it in like a connected fridge or a dishwasher? I would just say, please stop. But of course, the industry will not follow that suggestion. We know that. Also, it says CES 2024 was 138,789 attendees, by the way. That was all the right. attendance total.
Well, that's still a pretty decent number. Still a pretty decent number, you know. Stuart, what do you think you're going to be – look, I know you're going to cover it online, but what do you expect to see?
Well, I agree with Rob. I think that AI is going to be used. And every time I see a press release with AI this and AI that, I keep thinking back to the late 1990s when HDTV was the big buzzword. And everybody and their brothers was adding HDTV ready to any product, any video or audio product that they could think of, despite the fact that nobody knew what the hell HDTV ready meant. And I think a lot of that is also in AI, that people are just applying this term, not knowing what it means, but it's a cool buzzword. And people are thinking about it. So people are throwing it in there, whether or not these things have any kind of AI capabilities or not. So I think we're not only going to see a lot of AI mentioned at CES, we're going to see a lot of overusage of AI at use. And I think it's going to take some discernment on the part of both the media and the consumer to understand exactly what AI means in the context of whatever product or companies are claiming for that product.
So John, I'm hearing a similar theme here. So Jim, John, do you really think that we're going to see a lot of companies where, and do you think the media, I think I already know the answer to this, but do you think the media is going to step up and say, you know, when you start applying AI to product categories that really do not benefit in any way, shape, or form with AI, why? You know, or is the AI allure so strong that there will not be a lot of really critical analysis, that it's just being peanut butter spread over everything?
I don't think there's going to be much critical analysis of it. I mean, the odd thing is, as we see from all the PR people using AI in all their emails and press releases, which is driving me absolutely batty. It's like quadrupled the number of pitches, and some of them are unintelligible. So it does work in one area. It's based on image and pattern recognition, and that's the only area this current generation of AI seems to work in. So if you've got an application like that, then it is going to make a difference. If it's a large language model, those suck. I mean, they're terrible. Look at all the computational power it's taking to give you the wrong answer in Google. It's unbelievable. Unless they just screen scrape something that, you know, a reputable outlet did. So it's pretty terrible. But I think what you'll see, one area, I know this is kind of weird and niche-y, but RoboVax, a lot of those, I think they're all over the place at IFA in Germany last September. You're going to see some more advances, I think, at CES. I think you're going to be surprised at how good these things are getting. And some of that is AI, you know, it is that image recognition. So they're applying it to what they're seeing. And that actually does help. I'm kind of cool for Radio Shack because they're coming back.
I have not heard in a long time.
Yeah. So they're owned now by a company in El Salvador, picked up the brand, and they want to relaunch it and introduce it at CES. So I'm kind of like, hey, because there are a couple of times, doesn't it happen to you? You're setting up some equipment like speakers or TV or something, and you need that one component. There's no Radio Shack. Like, and you know, Amazon.
That's the one thing that Radio Shack had. I mean, they had distribution. I mean, they had, 10,000 stores across the country? They had distribution.
Right. So when you needed those cables or whatnot, they were perfect. So I don't know. I'm curious to see. I know that doesn't sound very advanced, but
you know. So
everything old is new again.
Yeah.
Exactly. So one trend that I expect to see is, now that the Copilot PCs have been out there in force, you know, Qualcomm has made some really, you know, powerful announcements with their Snapdragon X Elite stuff. I've played with several samples that have been sent to me. They're pretty damn good from a battery life standpoint. They do use an ARM version of Windows, which is pretty compatible with the 86 Windows version, but there are some apps that will not run. Now Intel's going through its own set of tribulations with the departure of their CEO Pat Gelsinger It's going to be interesting to see the way that kind of plays out. But and they've got their, you know, their latest notebook level solution, and there's desktop versions of it as well, is Lunar Lake, which actually the early feedback on it is actually pretty good from a battery life standpoint. What do you think? Are you guys in a position right now? And Rob, let me start out with you, that you would unabashedly recommend someone to buy a Snapdragon X Elite?
I think this is really good for them, given that for most people, battery life is more important than performance. And Intel has been pushing performance for so long. Give me something that is light, that lasts a long time, that doesn't have a fan spinning up. And with the latest round of Snapdragon chips, they're allowing much more affordable laptops than before, which addresses one issue that we had with the first round of laptops using Qualcomm's Ryzen CPUs.
Yes.
To use the former nickname they had for that. Yeah, absolutely should. I think the app compatibility issues have really been addressed by and large, especially when most people, they use Chrome and a handful of other apps. And Chrome, of course, was one of those holdouts. And Google shipped a version of it for ARM processors on Windows earlier this year.
Stuart, how do you weigh in on this topic?
Well, I mean, the connection between mobile and laptop on the Android Windows side has always been lacking when you compare it to Apple's coordination of the two OSs. So I think that anything that that PC makers can do to try to get their systems more in tune with the mobile side is anything that positive. And of course, that's one of the things that's been hurting Intel, because they decided they didn't want to get involved with mobile early on. And that's what we'll get to that later. The other thing I also want to mention is that CES, in relation to AI, by the way, underneath a lot of it is going to be advances in quantum computing. Mm-hmm. And I think you're probably going to see a lot of quantum computing efforts that are going to be showcased in the show, along with a lot of alternative energy sorts of things. One of the big concerns in the quantum industry and in AI, and John would know about this, is where all this power is going to come from. That the power needs of both AI and quantum computing just can't be handled by current power sources. They're killing the power the energy sector. And so I think you're going to see a lot of discussion. You will probably see a lot of things on the show floor, but a lot of discussion about quantum and energy.
Right. John?
Yeah, I think the energy problem is, I mean, that just shows you, I think, that the large language model doesn't work, right? If you need that much computing power and that much energy to spit out something that seems trivial, then it's not working. Yeah, it's not working. Quantum computing may not take that much power. I mean, once that gets going, it may take less, depending on the systems and stuff. So it's hard to say. But you're right, Stuart. I mean, we're up in the Northeast. The idea that they're going to open Three Mile Island, just from an engineering point of view, is an extremely bad idea, right? And it's something that's a decrepit building that was not built to last this long. And there, and Microsoft wants to kick it open again because they just want the power. So that's going to be
an announcement in Virginia yesterday of a company that wants to open a nuclear fusion plant north of Richmond by 2030. Which, I mean, big if true, but people have been saying commercial fusion has been around the corner, you know, 10 years in the future for at least the last 30 years counting.
Right.
So I really hope these guys have actually got this thing cracked, because that would be handy. Because given the rate that we're building data centers across Virginia, we're not going to be able to keep up.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
Well, let's hop to the next topic here, because we've got a couple other areas that I want to cover here. And, you know, Rob, this is like I'm putting a poll on a tee. I want you to tee off on it. I know you've got some strong opinions.
So first thing to know about Brendan Carr, we've seen a lot of Trump appointees. He is not a Tulsi Gabbard. He is not a Pete Hegseth. He's not a Kash Patel. He's not, God forbid, an RFK Jr. He's actually qualified for the job. He's been on the commission for 4 years and counting, I think.
Right.
And for most of that tenure, he's been sort of a traditional smaller government Republican. He doesn't want the government to spend so much money on building fiber everywhere if wireless and satellite can handle it. He thinks we do not need net neutrality regulations. They solve a problem that doesn't exist in his view. But Mr. Carr has taken this pivot in recent months towards a big government view in which the FCC should use authority that most people thinks it does not and has never had to regulate content moderation at social networks. He suggested that TV broadcasters should have their licenses possibly revoked if their content violates a public interest standard, which is really out of line for what the FCC or any communications regulator should be doing in a democracy. And the weird thing is, it doesn't make sense given his own past records. When he talks about net neutrality, Carr will say, like, look, the Supreme Court has said under the major questions doctrine, we don't have the authority to wade into this area. Congress needs to say we should do that. How you can then say that and then turn around and say the FCC should get to reinterpret Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act to thereby limit the immunity of social platforms for their content moderation decisions is bananas. And I've talked with enough people around DC about this. And the theory I've heard more than once is, you know, sometimes you write some memo you don't really agree with just to look good to the boss. That is a theory I've heard more than once. And it could be, because if he does try to do these things, if he suggests that the FCC, the next time there's a broadcast license up for renewal at a local station, which isn't until 2028, the FCC should maybe not renew that automatically. Or if he suggests that the FCC should start regulating how Facebook polices content, he will get ground down in the courts endlessly. It will not go anywhere. He will waste a lot of people's time and a lot of taxpayer money defending these doomed efforts. So many mysteries about this man.
Stuart?
Well, one of the things that I've heard chatter about is what they're going to do about the Universal Service Fund, which had been providing subsidies for low-income consumers for internet access, which expired, what, I think, in April, earlier this year, April or February. Apparently, the disagreement amongst the Democrats and Republicans isn't necessarily the good that the program is doing, but where the funding is coming from. And I think that's going to be one of the questions that both Congress and the FCC are going to want to address, because the funding of where the funding comes from is one question, but the fact that it was doing some good along with there was another program called BEAD. I don't remember what the acronym stood for,
but it was Access and Development.
Thank you. And it's about what Rob mentioned is about favoring fiber optics, and where Brendan Carr is probably going to, with Elon Musk now having a strong voice in the administration, going to be favoring more wireless internet access. So I think you're going to, whether or not you're going to see the Universal Service Fund refunded by another source, and whether or not those subsidies will be put back into place, and how the BEAD priorities will be set, as well as whether or not he's going to do something, as Rob mentioned, to Section 230, because Carr has said that content moderation is Orwellian, obviously pointing to that the belief that the conservative voices are somehow being stifled. So I think those are the as Rob mentioned, I think those are the three things that we're going to see out of the FCC. The other thing is frequency auctions or spectrum auctions that may be coming back again.
Finally, glad you mentioned the USF. That's one area where Carr actually, his views align surprisingly with those of European telecom regulators, because he, like them, thinks we should refinance the USF with a tax on the largest content providers to basically say, you, Facebook, you, Google, have done so well, you need to kick in a fair share. I've seen Carr use that phrase, and EU types have used that as well. So it's not just paid for by that little surcharge on your telecom bills.
John?
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, clearly that sort of misunderstanding about internet access not being a utility when it is a utility is probably the most fundamental problem with Carr. It was designed, I know, because I was on the standards body that preceded that, as a utility. That's what it's supposed to be. and that's sort of what it's become. Yeah, it's interesting. Will that money come back? I doubt it, to help lower income. And I, you know, it affected bills, just to give you an example, around here, from if you had that tax break because you were in a lower, or that break on the fee, the monthly fee, your internet access for high-speed internet access was about $30 a month. It went up to $100 and over $100 once that was lifted. So for families or people that were trying to compete and actually, you know, in this hybrid environment, have a job, that became problematic suddenly for them. So yeah, I don't know that it's going to come back. I'm agree with Rob. What this guy will do is anybody's guess, because there are some crazy ideas that he's just suggested, that you go after broadcasters. The Des Moines Register story, the guy is not even in office yet, and he's trying to go after media for numbers. I don't like numbers. Bad. Yeah. So examples like that, I would say that he may, Carr may not have much of a choice, and it may, you may see a lot of that. And they've made promises that they will go after the media, and they have done things they promised before. So I think we just have to assume. And most of the companies, and this is going to come up at CES quite a bit, are lawyering up. They do not see this as a good environment for them. And they look at a lot of things that are going to happen, and they are getting funds together in their budgets, and they're planning for this. So they're anticipating they're going to have some problems. What happens, you know, again, it's hard to prognosticate, but I just go with what people say they were going to do and assume that's what they're going to do.
Guys, before we get to the last topic, I want 30 seconds on the late breaking news with TikTok, Supreme Court, you know, because that is very, very timely, because TikTok has a deadline in front of them in January. TikTok. Rob, if you just give me 30 seconds on what you think.
Me first?
Yeah, go ahead.
TikTok is looking pretty screwed. Having read the news ruling, the court is taking the executive branch and the legislative branch at their word and saying, you know, yes, it is true that no one is pointing to an actual instance of the Chinese Communist Party using TikTok to spread their propaganda or spy on Americans. We can't prove that they didn't do it. This Supreme Court seems to have a pretty expansive view of executive branch power. So I really don't see, it's possible that the court will grant TikTok a stay. So on January 19th, it does not get kicked off the app stores.
Right.
But having read the logic of this ruling and having seen what's come out of the Supreme Court, does not look good for TikTok and ByteDance.
Stuart, 30 seconds.
Well, again, I'm not a lawyer and I don't play one on television, and trying to predict what the Supreme Court will do is, you know, I think a fool's game at this point. What they did with the Chevron Act surprised a lot of people. So whether or not they lean towards Trump, does not want TikTok kicked off. Apparently he considered it a strong platform for him during his campaign. So it may very well be that whatever Trump says, the Supreme Court will follow. It's just very difficult to know whose side, what anybody's on, whether or not there's any even applicable laws that judge this. You know, apparently you're supposed to be innocent until proven guilty. And again, as Rob mentioned, nobody has pointed to any instance where the Chinese Communist government has used any of the information from this. So how does the Supreme Court rule against a company that hasn't proven to have done anything wrong? So I don't know. I'm not on TikTok. It's difficult to see. But if Trump decides that he wants TikTok to stay around, I can't imagine the Supreme Court is going to rule against that.
Well, and you've heard Trump say this before. He really would really like to see TikTok stick around.
Right.
Not because of any constitutional reasons. It's really built around the fact that, you know, a lot of my constituency is people who watch TikTok, who use it. Right. And I don't want to blow that up.
So just have it sold off to one of his buddies. Do we know any people with a lot of money who are in the social network?
What a puzzlement that is.
Yeah, really.
John, before we get to the last topic, let me just give you 30 seconds on this.
Yeah, I would have said before that the Supreme Court would have automatically, because there's no reason why I can't legislate something like that. There's nothing, there's no real actual objection to it. If the government decides to do that, that's within their purview to do that. However, as you all just pointed out, because the Supreme Court is not considered to be an independent body anymore by most Americans, and because of Donald Trump packing the court, I agree with Stuart. If Trump is now saying, I like TikTok. He didn't like it before. And people from TikTok have visited Mar-a-Lago and they've been, you know, bending the knee there recently in the last couple of weeks. I'm betting the Supreme Court folds too and says they delay, Trump comes into the office and suddenly it all disappears. Yeah, that's what I would expect.
Well, this one's going to be a fascinating one. So let's hit the last topic because I think it's an important one that you know, and let me just say up front, I hate to say this because I believe competition is a great thing. I've worked with Intel very closely in a, you know, capacity when I was at Compaq and Dell and other companies, and they're a much different company. The market's a much different place than it was when I worked with them, you know, 15 years ago. Kind of, you know, been working with them, you know, in a different capacity. But the departure of Gelsinger, who, you know, let's face it, he had a real tough job. I mean, you know, Intel is a behemoth. They've got this foundry business, which has not really yielded a lot of profitable results quite yet. And I will say the first thing that there's a national security implication to this, because do you really want a non-American company building chips that go into fighter jets? Probably not. But then you've also got a company, and Rob, you alluded to it before, but maybe Sue, it was you, that here's a company that has, you know, at least from a technology and innovation standpoint, they've missed a number of different major trends, mobile devices, for example, that have had broad implications. It was way before Gelsinger became CEO, although he was at Intel before, and they're still paying for that, by the way, those kind of mistakes. Right. So I don't know. I mean, they from an innovation standpoint, Lunar Lake is showing a lot of progress, and the benchmarks are seemingly are promising. But I don't know. I just think that whoever their CEO comes in, and it has to be someone. I wrote about this. I wrote an article in Tech News World. I don't know if you guys read it, comparing Intel to the New York Giants, and that was actually in the headline. Not exactly a great favorable headline. I have more faith in Intel turning things around than I do the Giants, but that's a different discussion. But Rob, what are your thoughts? Because you know you're a PC guy. You follow the space. All you guys follow the space pretty closely.
It is fundamentally over 20 years. More like a 25 year span. We've gone from beleaguered Apple Computer Inc. to beleaguered Intel, which is something nobody would have predicted. This is fundamentally a more dynamic industry than a lot of people give it credit for. Yeah, it's crazy. I think we do need, you know, the computer industry is better with Intel in it. I think it does come back because, yeah, I mean, they have such a huge business. They do seem to be, with moves like Lunar Lake and Arrow Lake, the desktop processor, they're sort of working to address their weaknesses relative to the competition. You know, they've been at this a long time. There's a lot of institutional knowledge. But yes, they certainly should have seen it coming that eventually there would be a viable ARM-based competitor. Certainly once Apple did that, that should have been all the warning they needed. How long ago did Apple Silicon come out?
4 years?
Yeah, like I didn't check that. Yeah. So yeah, obviously there are long, you know, timelines to get a new line of chips, you know, into the market. But yes, the warning signs should have been there. And I didn't see them myself. I didn't write anything 5 years ago saying, hey, Intel, you better get your act together. I assume one of us did, right?
Well, Stuart, I want to turn this over to you because you're a pretty explicit guy when it comes to articulating your feelings. Here's the thing that frustrates me. Intel is a mammoth company. They probably should have cut their headcount more dramatically about 3 years ago when Gelsinger came on board, because you know you get that kind of grace period when the new CEO comes in to clean house. He didn't do that. They did get rid of 15,000 people in the Bay Area largely about 7, 8, 9, 10 months ago. But here's my premise. When you change a big organization, bringing Gelsinger in, you know, it seemed like a smart move because he knew where the bodies were buried. He knew the organization. He was a lifelong dedicated Intel guy before, you know, before he went to VMware, and then he came back. The problem is, and I know this, you know, that I see, is that Intel is such a large organization, and the people who have survived there at the management level have been survivors. you know? And when you're a survivor at a corporation, especially one as large as Intel, you tend to be very risk averse. And as you know, Apple proved this, Qualcomm has proved this to a degree. Sometimes you got to take risks. You know, I really truly believe that they've got to bring someone in completely outside of outside from Intel. Maybe not even someone from a semiconductor background, which would be heresy, because that's a very
common. I'm about to nominate Elon Musk.
No, I'm not. But I want to get Stuart on, based on what I just kind of articulated. Do you really think they're going to, they really do need a leader that has no ties to the company in a former capacity, kind of like a Lou Gerstner at IBM when they brought him in? He didn't know, you know, he was a customer, you know, he was American Express, Nabisco. Or do they need a technology visionary type of guy?
I'd lean towards a technology visionary guy, but only because the number of technologies that they decided not to invest in, and I'll get a couple of those in a moment. Rob has already mentioned a couple of them, but also because IBM was a little different situation in that they had the singular hardware business and then they switched completely to services. And I don't think that's a situation that exists here for Intel. That's the first thing. Second thing is that Intel is the only American, completely American chip company. They design and manufacture the chips in the U.S. They're facing competition not only from NVIDIA and Qualcomm, but now Xiaomi is going to be producing their own mobile chips and they're doing their own cars. So you can expect that Xiaomi, which is becoming enormous, Samsung does their own chips also, and they've been trying to even replace Qualcomm in the Galaxy phones. So it's not only that they have current competition, but there's new competition. And I think you need somebody in there who understands these little particulars, because you can't make that IBM hardware to service switch. That's not what Intel's business is. There is a lot of analogy here to what happened at Kodak. Kodak invented digital cameras and then decided not to invest in them until everybody else had. And I think that's what's going on here. Intel invested in a Dutch company called ASML, which has this very unique and very forward looking, I don't know the technology. It's called EUV, I think, but it's a way of physically producing chips. And they invested a lot of money in this company and then didn't buy the machines, while TSMC bought the machines and a couple of other people have bought the machines. And NVIDIA, I think, bought one of these machines. These are the most forward-looking chip-making machines that Intel didn't buy. Third thing I think is at work here is because they are the only true American chip maker, it poses almost a national security risk. Rob mentioned it before, or I think you mentioned it before, Mark, that the U.S. government is not going to want to put foreign-made chips into their defensive hardware. Yes. You may very well see an intervention of some sort by the federal government here during this current administration to make sure that Intel remains a player, and whether or not that is restricting competition by defunding or refunding the Biden CHIPS Act, or doing something that helps to make Intel a little stronger, to give them a little boost, or even some sort of subsidy like GM got under the Obama administration to put GM back, because the Obama administration didn't think that America could afford to lose the biggest car maker in the world. So I think there's a lot of these things at play here that may start percolating a little faster after January 20.
So, John, in the few minutes we got left here, you don't miss words either. That's what I love about you, most of the time. But seriously, do you think Intel can come back?
Oh, yeah, I definitely think they can come back. I mean, the history and the intellectual property and that they have already, and they just absolutely, I think they will continue to push forward. I still remember when Pat was a new guy, so it's kind of, you know, it's kind of like, what, he's leaving? He just got there. But I think a lot of it, as you kind of alluded to, goes back to a time when Global Foundry was on the rise and opening fab plants, and Intel was saying, we're going to get out of the fab business. You know, they thought, oh, why should we be in it? We have the technology to make it, and we just, you know, do the ultraviolet lithography, and we just get smaller and smaller and smaller, and that's what we'll do. But obviously that wasn't a good strategy. So those are some mistakes made back when. And the other is the mobile market. Yep, lots of people didn't get that. Microsoft didn't get it either. So that, you know, there's two companies that didn't get it. I think the moonshot idea is a good one. I think there's lots of opportunity looking forward for Intel. I know people are going to go, yeah. I've heard this before, but autonomous vehicles are a thing, and that is going to happen. It didn't happen to all the hype and what we expected. So the fact that NVIDIA doesn't matter at all what their market share is right now in that market. There's no winner, and there aren't any autonomous vehicles we can buy ourselves. There are a lot of opportunities like that, I think, for Intel. That's going to be heavy compute, and that's so I think they need somebody that's going to do that. I know it's risky, like you said, but I think it's necessary.
Yeah, I think, you know, just to kind of wrap a bow around this before we kind of cut out today, you know, I agree with all three of you. America, the American economy, even the world is a better place if Intel can come back. I mean, I don't think there's any dispute with that. I think the challenge is going to be is this thorny issue around national security, the U.S. Making sure, because there's no question about that. You do not want a non-U.S. company putting chips in defense equipment. It just, you know, really bad idea, you know. So it's going to be really hard to navigate that, because the challenge is that Intel's foundry business is not if they wanted to sell it right now, I'm not sure anybody would want to buy it, just given where it is right now. And let me just conclude by saying that the design part of the equation and the manufacturing part of the equation, semiconductors, today in 2024 is a much more complex industry, especially the manufacturing of chips, than it was maybe 15, 20 years ago. There's a level of expertise that is specific to the manufacturing, the shrinking of dies, the fabrication processes that go into that, that are very complex. And that's part of the problem that Intel has, is that if I want to take some of that free capacity at Intel foundries and free it up for Qualcomm or even Apple, if I'm Apple, do I want my IP being manufactured in a company that I'm essentially competing with on the processor side? Now, they do have church and state. Oh, yeah, the Intel employees on this side of the equation don't talk to the employees on the design side of the house. I'm not sure I feel comfortable about that. If I was a competitor, I'm not sure I would feel comfortable about that. But it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. More to talk about this. We'll certainly chat at CES. And guys, I do appreciate your time, and thanks for taking the time to join me for today's podcast. For our viewing and listening audience, thanks for making the Smart Tech Chat podcast part of your day of commute. Please make sure that you hit the like and subscribe buttons at the end of today's podcast, or use these on-screen QR codes to connect with me. You can also follow me on X, formerly known as Twitter, at Mark Vita Tech Guy. Guys, if we don't chat before the holidays, have a nice holiday yourselves. And I will see you in Las Vegas, where I am right now, in a couple of weeks.
Happy holidays, everybody. Take care.
You too.
See you next year.